Get your fix of the Uncommon Cast RX, your cure for the Common Rider Show. Join us as we discuss the bravest of all the fighters and those Heisei guys, too. With burning justice in our souls, let's tear it up!
I'm Amit.
And I'm Sono.
And today we're putting Drive to the test as speedy as we can as we cover Episode 11, Who Will Prevent the Unholy Knight? Oh, and also Drive Secret Mission Type Zero. Alright, so I have questions, and I know you have answers. So my first question is... So apparently Chase was proto-drive. Does that mean Professor Bonneau is a fiction, as Aleph had suggested? And also, how do you feel about Chase almost certainly having been proto-drive?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much confirmed at this point. I mean, it's all but been said. I mean, we didn't really see all that much evidence of Bonneau himself.
Bonneau. I think I just said Bonneau. vowels are complicated. But we haven't seen much evidence of him, so maybe he's not real, or is maybe already heart and brain, or any number of other things. We really need more information on the Roimude and what they're doing specifically to really get more speculation on him, because right now he's just a name that's been dropped. So we have no proof of him being real. I'm not really against Chase being proto-drive. I know that's something that's come up as other people on the show have been against it pretty adamantly. I'm pretty okay with it. I didn't want him to be Mach. I thought that would be stupid. But I'm okay with him being proto-drive as long as they play it right. It could be really interesting, especially since we're tying every single rider to Kiriko. She seems to have really direct, concrete ties with very different ties with every single rider. And I think if they make the right choices, it could be a very interesting story. I'm just not 100% sure they're going to make the right choices because they haven't always. And I'd really kind of hate to see this crash and burn.
That's something, really interesting that you bring up, that everybody so far has been connected to Kiriko. And, what do you think could be behind that? Is that, and just let me pause you real fast, because you watched a lot of Kyuriger, right? Or you ended up
yes.
seeing the whole thing?
I did end up watching the whole thing.
Are there any parallels you can draw to that? Does it have something kind of to do with Shroud sort of being at the center of all the ridery stuff?
Yeah, know? I lead more on kind of Shroud and Akiko as a parallel, because Akiko had less concrete ties at the onset, but, I mean, Akiko has the tie to Narumi being her father, the tie to Shotaro and Philip being in her building, and then later the tie to Terui eventually marrying him.
Oh, spoilers.
Yeah,
not that everybody
spoiler
doesn't
there,
know that
but
already,
I
probably.
Mean, it's been a couple years. You've probably all seen Double by now.
Probably.
But, I mean, Akiko's ties weren't as apparent as Kiriko's are in the beginning, where it's her partner, this guy who saved her in the past, and then her brother, where those are all really, like, from the outset, very concrete. But Akiko does have all of those ties, so that may just be, might be Sanjo playing his games. I think in Movie War Core, is that where we get the skull flashback?
Yes, that is.
Yeah, that's kind of where Akiko really brings that up, where she's like, I am surrounded by riders all the time and I'm sick of it, which in the context of that movie didn't make a whole lot of sense, but whatever. But I think that's really the more accurate parallel than anything in Kyoryuger. I can't really think of anything specific there where everyone was really tied back to one person in that way.
Okay, well, that's fair. It's good to get a little broader perspective because I hadn't thought about it really, really well, hard. I don't know,
yeah.
Adequately. Whatever. Language. Okay, so, yeah, I mean, I cannot imagine that it will turn out that he isn't, or he wasn't proto-drive, and... do you know anything about the toy scans or have you completely stayed away from those?
I've seen the scans for Mach's spike gun thing.
Okay, right.
That's really all I've seen lately. Usually once a series is going, I don't actively look for scans like I do during pre-press stuff. But I'll come across them. They will be put in front of me.
Well, you know how there's typically like cross-play sort of capabilities in the toys?
Yeah.
I'm wondering what, and I don't want to get too deep into it, just, you know, so I don't bug you. Like how, what the implications might be of like Chase, like his shift, I don't know, Romeo cars or whatever they are, like having crossplay with the toy for Mach.
I don't know about that because Mach doesn't use cars.
Right.
Mach uses bikes, or at least that's what it looks like. I don't know if you're going to be able to do both. If he's going to be able to use bikes and cars, if other people are going to be able to use his bikes. I'm in the dark about that right now.
There's definitely, it seems to me, flexibility because it's just like the tire that's the focal point. So, I mean, we'll have to see how that goes. But I think I saw something about crossplane. It made me wonder, like, are Chase and Mach going to somehow team up later? But that's, we haven't even seen Mach in the show, really. So
yeah, we've had him kind of walk in. And we'll get to that later, but right now it's everything's a little bit up in the air.
Yeah, it's a really weird state of flux. So anyway, next question: what do you think this medic promise number thing is about? And do you feel she? How do you feel she's presented? Is she like a baby, a goddess, a person? I couldn't quite tell what they were going for.
Medic isn't exactly what I wanted her to be. But we've seen her do absolutely nothing, so I can't say whether I like her or I don't like her. She could still end up being great, just not what I was hoping for. Because I was hoping for more something in line with, like, trying to say two names at once because they both start with an M. Mizzul or Medusa.
Oh.
That was very difficult. I am sorry. where she's kind of ruthless. Just because I prefer that in a female villain, where you have Medic, who also starts with an M, and this is making things very difficult for me to say, she seems to be a bit more on the docile side, but for all I know, she's still potentially very interesting if they play her right. I hope that really her whole purpose isn't to remain kind of docile and naive and just kind of let Heart guide her around by the hand all the time, because that would be terrible, and I'd be completely disappointed in Toei after giving us Kiriko and Rina, who are the complete opposite of that. I'm hoping that maybe we see her kind of be led around by Heart for a little while, start picking up on things, picking up on kind of how to use her innocence, quote-unquote, as an act to really kind of take charge of things, and end up being kind of just as ruthless as Heart and Brain, but playing it on a very different spin. This whole promise number thing is still really vague, though, and I'm not sure what to make of it, because the promise number is apparently not 108.
Yeah, I'll just jump ahead a little bit. It's apparently, well, to me it seems like a select number, and I don't know, well, I don't know how many people are familiar with eschatology, but there's this thing in the Book of Revelations about 144,000 who are sealed, and the population is obviously much larger than 144,000. And these 144,000, well, they're sealed. Like, that's the important part. They're distinct from among, like, a distinct, separate group of people. Don't want to get into it. But maybe it isn't about winnowing it down to a number of people. Maybe it's about the emergence of these sealed special individuals coming about.
Maybe. I know the 108 itself is specific to a specific piece of folklore that I keep forgetting everything about between periods of time that I talk about it. And I don't know if the promise number is still tied to that specific piece of folklore. I would have to go in and research that, and maybe I will do that for the next show and try to have some more proper answers there. But I do think that even if there is answers, like metatextual answers, that's not good enough. these things need to be elaborated more in show. We're 11 episodes in now, and we need something a little more concrete.
Yeah, that's for sure. Okay, so we got an answer from Joe regarding question one, and I'll go ahead and just read what she had to say. I wonder if Chase being both Proto-Drive and Proto-Zero indicates were initially designed for good. Shinosuke has basically already stated that he knows his technology comes from the same source as the Romudes. If I recall correctly, she was described as a gothic nurse or some such on the Toei site. It seems that when something bad happens to Hart, he gets medical attention, but when it happens to one of his subordinates, he has Chase put them down like animals. I get a feeling that's going to come into play later. That's a really interesting. That's me talking back to Joe. Especially as Medic revives right after Hart and Brain have a conversation where they disagree about what to do with Chase.
It's not really Hart that's having Chase put everyone down, though. It's Brain. Hart seems to be okay with letting everyone kind of run their course a little, unless they go really overboard. It's Brain that's more, you're potentially doing something that's going to mess this up for us. Chase, go get rid of them.
Yeah, we've brought up the distinction before about how Hart is a little more touchy-feely and Brain is definitely more by the book, just in general, even though he flips out like a
five-year-old, and it's great, and I love it. That's such an interesting thing to have kind of the literal Brain of the operation, like, throw a fit when he doesn't get his way. That's hysterical.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, with my being slightly unsatisfied with the story development with the Roimudes, I really like, now that we've kind of got everyone moving ahead, Chase, Hart, and Brain moving ahead as characters, I really like what they're doing with them.
Yeah, it's been pretty cool so far, especially, I mean, they get almost brotherly or something later on in the episode. Why don't you go ahead and read the next answer, and then we'll continue.
From Watanabe Shu. Based on the series so far, I can only assume that Chase was Proto-Drive, not because his actor provides his voice or that they have a similar color scheme, but that the connections are obviously there. I mean, we all know that Machin Chaser has been remodeled with the use of Proto-Drive's features and able to use the shift cars. I truly believe that Chase has been acting strange because his subconscious was Proto-Drive's as well. He is constantly reminded of how he is unable to harm Kiriko while he almost dismantled Drive in a fight. Why would he be haunted by Kiriko personally, which I agree with, and that's something I've kind of been alluding to as we've talked about it. Proto-Drive saved her once during the global freeze. Where was Chase during the Roimudes invasion? And having Proto-Drive defeated by Hart, it would only make sense that he has been modified, and for Chase having to use a device to become Machin Chaser despite being a Roimude. I agree with a lot of that. Again, the fact that he's sticking on Kiriko personally really, really brings me back to it's almost certain that he's Proto-Drive, just from context narrative clues. I agree pretty much entirely with everything that Shu is saying here.
Yeah, I definitely think that's really solid reasoning, and I like the fact that they brought up, it's not because of these facts, you know, that he was doing the voice for Proto-Drive, which I'm pretty sure he was.
Yeah, I think we've had that confirmed somewhere.
Okay. And, you know, I it was funny, I did notice while we were watching, oh, look, there's the little purple stripes on the black outfit, and that makes sense.
Yeah.
And we saw Proto-Drive had a motorcycle, and of course Chase has one, and who knows where that came from, and all those sorts of things. So, there's a lot there that makes it seem like it's definitely the case.
But I mean, I do really like the focus on story elements that lead toward that, because the story does really kind of put you in that direction, and I'm just glad to see someone else focusing on that instead of, like, these metatextual facts.
Right.
Because, I mean, the metatext is always good, and we can derive a lot from it, but I really like context. That's just me.
No, I understand. So we're gonna go through, the facts of what we know about the plot and characters of the show from episode 11. Okay, so Chase saved Hart from the dead zone, which is apparently his overheating. Brain chastises them, and Chase goes with him to take care of some business. These guys totally have some love for each other, I feel, or like a family vibe almost, and I think it's really nice to see.
Yeah, they remind me of a more, I guess, Kamen Rider version of the guy arc from Goanger, which I'm really digging. I mean, they're much more serious because this is not Goanger, unfortunately. Not that this is bad, but man, Goanger. they're much more serious. Their goal is much more of a threat. but I do really dig that they allow this kind of downtime for themselves, and they have these personalities outside of, okay, let's kill all the humans. Like, they overall seem to like and care about each other to an extent, and I think that's pretty cool, and it really plays into the idea of them trying to be their own functional society, where they get along and they have certain ones that are like family to them.
Yeah, and I think something interesting about that is that you make the distinction that there are certain ones that are like family to them, and it's kind of, I think it's more interesting that there's like a select group or there's cliques among them, like the Dozer or like Shovel or whatever guy who had the two sidekick rolling
units,
that were his friends. That was cool. Okay, moving on. So shift cars that were dispersed internationally are returning as Roemu activity is increasing in Japan. Some shift cars who'd just gotten back in town, I would assume they were brought by Mach.
Probably. That would make sense because he was overseas.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I was wondering if they took a plane or something. But anyway, yeah, some of these, like, I'm guessing we're going to see them showcase largely the shift cars that saved Shinosuke and Mr. Belt.
More shift cars. More shift cars that we are not going to hear stories of with their kind of international missions. I'm now very curious as to if they were brought by Mach, how long has Mach been involved in this, and how did Kiriko not know? Assuming that she doesn't know, which I'm assuming that she doesn't because it hasn't been brought up. But, I mean, it bothers me that they made such a big deal out of Dream Vegas and Dimension Cab, and now we're not getting that from any other shift cars. If they hadn't done Vegas and Cab, like, I wouldn't care. It would just be, okay, cars show up whenever. But now you're telling me that they have personalities and relationships and stories, and I want to know it for everyone. And yeah. I'm not getting that, and it's annoying me.
Yeah, that bit of inconsistency doesn't really make any sense at all. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah, I mean, I love Vegas and Cab. Anyone following me anywhere will have picked up on that, in that there's going to be cosplay this summer. But if you're going to do it for one, you have to do it for all. Otherwise, it feels weird.
Yeah, definitely. And I wonder, I wonder why you would choose to do that. But I guess I don't have an insight into the mind of Riku Sanja, so I can't really say.
Yeah, I mean, I get that we need these toy gimmicks and that he's trying to find a way for them to be relevant to the story and to kind of aid the story. Except Vegas and Cab really didn't aid that much where they were placed. But I can understand, I think, what he's trying to do. Again, I have not spoken to him, so I mean, this is complete conjecture, but it's just not working. Because he did it one time, and now no one else gets these narratives.
Yeah, and as much as, I don't know, I like Kamen Rider and not necessarily Kamen Rider and their little robotic friends, I wish there'd be a little more bravery on the part of Toei to just, like, dedicate an episode to shift cars. Like, why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah. Then kids will want to buy them.
You would think so. And isn't that the goal?
In the end, yes.
But, like, it's just funny to advocate for that, but we're saying to do it in a good way.
Yeah, like, if you're gonna do it anyway, do it in a way that works.
Yeah, ideally.
Like, do it in a way that at least, like, it's consistent and entertaining instead of, like, okay, well, we're not gonna keep doing this because we don't have time in the story to get to dedicate to this. Then don't put that in there in the first place. You should have learned that in Wizard.
Yeah, don't even go there, right?
Like, you shouldn't have put the whole Haruto Dragon story out there if you're never gonna address it.
Yeah, super weird stuff, man. Alright, well, let's keep going. Kiriko dangles the carrot of birthday dinner at a nice restaurant for Shinosuke, which helps him get primed for action, I guess. He remembers the controller Volt had, and Kiriko tells him about the similar item in the book, which they'd read together, of course.
I thought this was pretty cute. I do love that we're kind of having these moments of Kiriko opening up and getting kind of their personal lives involved. Being like, okay, this is something we're doing outside of being police. This is something we're doing as a friend. I want to take you out to dinner for your birthday. So we have to do this. Otherwise, you're not going to have a birthday party.
Right.
Because he's had this whole kind of humorous, my birthday's on Christmas, so my birthday gets overshadowed by Christmas thing going. That I've personally found amusing. I don't know what other people think of it. But since being a Kamen Rider is a very personal thing, this is something that affects his life outside of his job. So I like that they're kind of bringing in the more personal aspect of it, and kind of the offer, Kiriko making that offer and having already made these reservations and made these plans for him, kind of drives home the end of the Technic arc, where it was before the Technic arc, where he was just worried that she only really saw them as work partners and not friends. And it's like, no, we're friends. Like, they come to this realization that they're friends, and now she's doing something for him as a friend. That's good consistency. That's the good consistency that should be happening in the story.
Yeah, that's true. Wow. We may have to edit this question out. But do you think that that's just her being an abuser and her sinking her hooks deeper into him?
No. She's taking her friend to dinner for his birthday.
Oh, okay.
Because it's his birthday, and he's openly shown that he has this kind of conflict about, you know, his birthday having been overshadowed by Christmas his whole life. I don't see how that's an abuse tactic.
Okay.
If I had the money, I'd take my friends to dinner on their birthdays. I just very rarely have the money.
Okay, fair enough.
I think of that sometimes. I just think of that conversation. That whole Kiriko is an abuser conversation, and I still can't make sense of it.
Okay.
I've been trying ever since then, and I can't make sense of it.
Okay, well, I'm glad it's not just me. And
it's a completely ridiculous notion.
Yeah, and I could see, like, if you were in a similar situation, anyway, I don't want to talk about it.
Guy made me uncomfortable for personal reasons that other people apparently didn't see, so I can't really.
Yeah, no, I mean,
like, if people feel how they feel, that's how they feel, and they're completely entitled to feel that way. But it's, as far as having been through the described situation myself in ways, it doesn't feel that way to me. It doesn't feel like that's what she's doing. Kiriko's just trying to be a good friend and partner and also work through her own issues.
Yeah, no, I can see that. Yeah, and definitely, I don't mean to delegitimize anyone else's personal experience. It's just, I think sometimes you're more sensitive to something because you've been through it, and just the smallest thing can remind you of someone or something that you don't like, something traumatic, really,
yeah,
is what I should say.
And that's a completely reasonable reason to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, And
I mean, if that's the case, if you're made that uncomfortable by it, as I did with Gaim, you should stop watching. You don't have to expose yourself to that.
Yeah, and definitely you shouldn't let people pressure you into, like, I don't know, like putting up with it or whatever, because that's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, if it's something that is really reminding you of something that was hard or horrible in your life, you should not keep exposing yourself to it. Because you're only hurting yourself, and don't do that to yourself. You deserve better.
Yeah, you're right. Alrighty, well, I think that was good. Let's continue, though. So the Special Crimes Unit and the uniform officers are all pitching in to find Goro, and we need more of this.
Yes! Oh god, going around with the photos was so good. That's such a police drama thing. And I want so many more police drama tropes in this show. I want police doing police things instead of hanging out and then someone maybe does a Kamen Rider thing. And maybe we arrest someone if we're lucky.
Yeah, or, you know, at least blow something up. Although I guess that's the Kamen Rider thing. But yeah, that was definitely cool.
But it just kind of legitimized the whole we're police aspect of this story.
Yeah. Which, yeah, unfortunately, that can get away from people sometimes.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so next note I have here is the captain uses his affable charms to get Shinosuke a meeting with Nishihori to pick his brain about the unknown Unholy Knight story as soon as he heard the name Nishihori mentioned. He's definitely on top of his game.
Oh, this was A+. Like, as soon as they have him, like, making noises on the phone, I knew where they were going with it.
Yeah.
But it was done in a really kind of humorous, enjoyable way, and it was just good to see him throw his weight around, because we haven't gotten to see him do anything like that. Where it's very clear that even though it seemed like he was just goofing off and being weird, he was paying attention and he was getting stuff done.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Like, good, you're the captain of a unit. You did it. Good, keep doing that.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, when you first see him, maybe, I don't know what kind of expectations people had from him, but he definitely doesn't look like the gritty... you know, captain who is an alcoholic and whatever. None of that is in his personage when I look at him, at least. I don't know what other people think, but I'm glad to see that they're maybe, I don't know, upending people's expectations.
Yes.
A little bit. At the very least, they're doing interesting stuff with him, so I want more of that.
Yeah, definitely, I want more of that. I want more of that for the entirety of Special Crimes. I want them to play with Special Crimes. I want to see what everyone in Special Crimes is capable of.
Yeah, I agree. Let's see. I feel like there's a decent evening filter. This is a really weird comment for me to be making on the scenes at the mall, because I'm pretty sure it was probably shot in daylight, because they
need to that, start early. Yeah. No, you know? It definitely seemed like it was a filter, but it didn't seem totally unnatural.
Yeah. And I thought, like, the little bit of unnatural edge that it had, like, really helped add tension to the scene. And just a sense of foreboding, I guess. And,
yeah.
Then, like, in addition to that, during that sequence, Shinosuke, like, was fully placing his trust in Kiriko to stop Volt. And I thought that was just so awesome.
Yes.
She's, you know, a person with a gun.
Yeah, like, I love any time that Kiriko is allowed to go fight on her own. Like, she hasn't been given anything special to fight with. I don't know why Rina hasn't built her a door gun yet, but I'm hoping.
Yeah.
But she's treated by Tomari, especially by Tomari, as though she's completely capable of handling any situation on her own with what she's got. Even though we all know she's not a Kamen Rider, she can't be for whatever reason that hasn't been explained to us. But we're being told she doesn't need to be. It's like, she's capable of, like, the Kamen Rider fully believes that she can go beat up this monster on her own without being a Kamen Rider. So, right. I mean, if he has that much faith in her, we're supposed to also.
Yeah, that's totally true. And that's something I hadn't really thought about. The audience should have as much faith as in her as he does.
Yeah, and I mean, it's... I keep saying, I want her... She's going full Ichijo. The amount of trust that Tomari is placing in her is coming up on how much trust Godai had in Ichijo. It's not quite there because no one's given Kiriko actual, like, Rormude fighting bullets like was given to Ichijo, where he actually did kill Grongi on his own without Kuga being present. I think it only happens, like, once or twice, but it does happen, and the fact that it happens at all is important enough.
That's exhilarating to hear. I had no idea. That's awesome, though.
So I wish that we would give Kiriko, like, a door gun where she would be able to at least do some damage on her own.
Yeah, I think that would be great.
Because, I mean, we're being told to believe that she can, but then it doesn't happen because she doesn't have the right tools.
Yeah, and I think something interesting about that is it would just make it more dynamic because they could be each having a fight at the same time in different areas.
Yeah, you could bring in more monsters, you could bring in more shift cars, because then Kiriko could do a final attack with the door gun on her own.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that would be so cool.
So, I mean, that opens a lot... oh, God, I'm about to make a pun. That opens a lot of doors.
Even with the warning, it was funny.
I didn't want to do it. But, I mean, the opportunity is there, and I don't know why they're not taking it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is weird. Okay, moving on to some more exciting stuff. So Volt becomes a spider car and almost kills Kiriko, but Mach saves her, so that's good. Then Shinosuke came along to fight Volt while Kiriko destroyed the controller and basically by herself saved, I mean, not by herself, but she was
the thing.
Yeah, exactly. She saved the city from blackout and that's super cool.
Yeah, CGI spider car was hilarious. The CGI in the show in general is hilarious. I mean, it was still pretty scary because, I mean, it's a giant spider, like, trying to stab her with its giant spider legs. But when you look at the whole thing, when the whole monster is in frame and you look at it, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's hysterical.
Yeah, there's no denying that.
And, I mean, I'm kind of glad that he did get this kind of advanced giant CGI form as a reason why Kiriko couldn't beat him on her own.
That's a good one.
Because, I mean, it would be really disappointing if it was just Volt and she couldn't beat him after we had been told, you can go beat him.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a good enough reason for me. I'm kind of confused by Mach, though. Why does he just show up, shoot it, but doesn't kill it, and then take off when that's your sister? Why not, you know, kill it or make sure she has some kind of greater opening so you know she's safe?
Yeah, that was a little ridiculous. It's such a contrivance, and, like, for an episode that I think did a lot of things really well, it really screwed up there.
Yeah, I mean, unless somehow, like, Kiriko has always, like, he's been Mach for a while, and Kiriko has always known about it, and they've already had this dynamic set up, which makes no sense.
No,
this hypothetical that I am putting out here makes no sense.
Yeah.
But, like, unless that's already there, and they have that dynamic worked out already, then maybe?
Well, but still, why wouldn't he stay to destroy the thing?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense at all. That was a really weird moment. But Kiriko got to do a lot in the way of saving the day in this episode. It really trusted her with a lot of big points in that, even if she's not the one who specifically killed the monster. And I'm so pleased that she got to do all these things. She got to go fight by herself, and she got to take out the controller. And even if she's not the one beating the monster, she really is the one who saved the day in 11.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm so happy for her.
Okay, let's see. So moving on from the facts to potential leads. Let's see. So Chase is stopped by the thought of endangering humans in Moss, and Brain calls him defective and lashes out at him for letting Shinosuke go.
I'm still kind of confused by Chase not wanting to kill humans. I guess at this point it goes back to him probably being proto-drive. Right. But it just, it feels like it's being played really awkwardly with where it started. Because it started specifically with him fixating on Kiriko, and then it was just, oh no, it's everyone. Hmm. Like, it's all humans. It just, it feels like it's being played very awkwardly, so I can't bring myself to totally buy it. But I'm up for any opportunity to see Brain throw a temper tantrum because he's not getting what he wants. I will allow for anything that lets that happen, because it's always hysterical to me.
Yeah, that's fair. I can't really say anything against that. Anyway, I gotta say, just real fast, as an aside, and then I'll go into my main point. His face sure reminds me of Kikaider, and I think that'll just be funny if he's like a mini Kikaider in this Kamen Rider show. But anyway, so Chase is Romulo, triple zero, and he looks more human in the face than the other androids, which almost gets Mr. Belt to say he is proto-drive, but he stops short of that.
Yeah, I don't. Maybe Steinbelt built his own Roimude to use the drive suit, because, I mean, I guess he would have had all the research there. Or if maybe Chase was a prototype that led to the other Roimudes, and then Steinbelt was like, I need someone to use this suit. Okay, I'll turn on the prototype. And that doesn't totally work out, and then the Roimudes steal him and reprogram him. And maybe Bano died or was dying, and Steinbelt made him into a Roimude, and then that Roimude ended up, that Roimude was 000, and then he was kidnapped to become Chase, and I kind of like that idea, but that's almost definitely not what's going to happen.
Right.
But I mean, there's a lot of options now that we have Chase in a Roimude body instead of him just kind of being an amnesiac human, as we all sort of assumed. This leads to a lot more interesting story choices.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. I really just, I'm curious about it. And I totally, like with him not knowing, I mean, I guess he knows he's a machine or a Roimude, but it really does remind me of Jiro a lot from Kikaider. And I don't know, that makes me happy because I like that. At least the first volume of the manga is, like, amazing, so. Anyway.
I mean, and maybe now that he's a Roimude, our other co-hosts will be more on board with the idea of him being proto-drive. Now that
perhaps.
He's just not, now that it's not as simple as him just being a dude with amnesia.
Right.
Because I do kind of agree that's not the best bit of storytelling. But yeah. now that we have something more and we have all of these other options that I've laid out that they probably won't use, I mean, at least now maybe it could be more interesting.
Yeah. Again, the doors are open. So, anyway, sorry. I'm so stupid. I was going to say, yeah, now the door is ajar. But, just, wow. Anyway, I'm off.
The door gun is such a beautiful thing. Yeah.
All the things it leaves. Gosh, man, I was gonna make another one. Never mind. So yeah. Anyway, so Nishihori is referenced, or no, Nishihori himself referenced Lupin is how I'm gonna say it because that's what I know from the Drive Gun movie. So that's interesting, I guess.
Yes, I do really like that we have all of these things being tied to like the movie and the episode zero. It makes them feel more legitimate to me, instead of like, okay, well, you don't really, these probably don't count as canon because canon never references them.
Right. But I like, too, that they definitely do seem like completely extraneous things, so it's not
Yeah,
like
you don't, like, we obviously haven't seen the movie war, but it doesn't take away anything from the episode. It's just this offhanded comment, but it legitimizes the movie into being canon without disrupting the canon at all.
Yeah, and well, like, it doesn't feel like Begins Night either, which I feel is so cheap because of how it, you know, you had to pay to get that part of the story, which I felt should have been integral to the show. But anyway, this avoids that, so that's nice. Let's see. Okay, so the SCU reuses Christmas attire from previous shows, both Ryder and Sentai, I believe, and surprises Shinosuke at his dinner with Kiriko in order to call back to him hating being born on Christmas, because of the combination of gifts for 2 days, and now it's even the SCU's, like, end-of-year office party, which I thought was... I actually thought it was hilarious. I believe I did laugh out loud, literally, so...
I know one of the very common reindeer costumes was missing.
Oh,
I did notice that. Yeah, the one with the face on it.
Okay.
They may have used the one that Jake used in Forze instead of that one.
Hmm. It felt like I saw a Gokaiger outfit in there, too.
Yeah, like, they definitely have, like, 10 Christmas outfits. And just kind of swap between them. And then they have, like, the two Black Santa outfits in case we need to do anything with the villains.
Yeah, I just saw somebody put that up on Tumblr from GoBusters, the Black Santas. That's so funny.
And I know Tomoko used one of the Black Santa outfits.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Because she's Tomoko.
Yeah.
But I thought this whole scene was so cute. And I did feel pretty bad for Shinosuke. He just wanted a nice birthday dinner with his partner. Like, separate from all this Christmas nonsense. Just nice time out with his partner. And then it gets lumped in with these other two celebrations. But then we immediately see him smiling and laughing with everyone else. So it's not like... This wasn't too hard on him. He wasn't really that upset. It was just a really nice scene that did a lot to develop kind of everyone on a personal level, and I wish we had more of that from Special Crimes.
Yeah, and hopefully, I mean, honestly, I can't see how that will continue to be the case, unfortunately, because, you know, the little end of the episode preview thing said, like, a new chapter begins in the story of Drive, and it's like, yeah, well,
yeah.
How much is, what's his name in the show?
Go.
Show?
Go.
Go. Okay. Show. Go. Go. Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like Go is gonna get some, I don't know, beast-like treatment. I mean, characters always get a lot of focus when they get introduced.
Yeah, I'm really worried about them, kind of meteoring him.
Yeah.
Where everything else becomes kind of irrelevant for maybe 10 episodes. And
yeah,
not looking forward to that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think we should double check the Forze episode credits to see how many of those hyper focused on Meteor episodes were written by Sanjo. Because that would suck if, like, all of them were.
Because we might not know what to expect. I should take a look at the Meteor episodes and who wrote them and who involved in writing them is on the Drive staff. I mean, there is the fact that we have Mach tied to Kiriko. Whereas Ryusei kind of was his own separate element.
That's true.
I mean, we do have that. And that gives me hope.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's still... The way they were playing that in the episode preview is worrying. Because why would you do that? Why would you set up 11 episodes... of getting us endeared to these, like, 8 people, and now everything's going to be this other guy.
Yeah. I have a really weird thing to say. Like, congratulations to the writers of Power Rangers Season 2 for not, like, ditching Tommy, because keeping him as the White Ranger going from green to white, like, may have been... I mean, obviously it's a brilliant move, because look how many people, like, are mad about Tommy. But, like, that was kind of a brilliant idea because you didn't have to, and the characters in the show themselves were worried about, well, who's going to replace Tommy and who's this new guy going to be and are we going to like him and all that stuff. But yeah, if they had taken instead, you know, Kyo or, you know, better, I'm sorry, Q or better, you know, Kiriko and made them mock, like, that would have made
Hayase.
Sense. Or Hayase,
I'm still on Team Hayase, because I really, at this point, I don't think I really want it to be Kiriko. I don't really want any context where it's Kiriko, because that takes away from her being able to do this on her own.
Yeah, I can see
and
that.
And I'm really on board with her just going full Ichijo. Like, I love that, and I love that they're letting her do it.
Right.
Because that's not something we give to female characters, really, ever.
Yeah, I think something interesting about that, too, is, letting her be her own character and stand completely on her own would be really interesting. And then having the mock suit, like, kind of fix Hayase, in a way, or at least, you know, fix his legs so that he can do the common riding would make a lot of sense. And I think it would, add, I don't know, a little bit more of a meaningful dimension. Like, he has even more stake in being a rider than just helping people. And that could lead to some interesting conflict as to whether he's just using the power source, so he can walk around freely, versus just wanting to help people, you know?
Yeah, and, I mean, why do we even have Hayase if it's not him? What is he bringing to this show? I mean, we've had a couple of really nice scenes with him. The scene with the three of them on the roof together was great, and I'd love for him to be mocked to get more of that, because that dynamic is really interesting, where they're both Shinosuke's partner. We've got Hayase, who knows him really well, who's been his partner for a long time and has that bond with him. And then you have Kiriko, who's his new partner, and that creates conflict between Hayase and Kiriko that would be interesting, that we haven't played with kind of which of us is really his partner.
Yeah, I mean, that almost sounds, I don't know, like it might not. I mean, that could go bad places.
Oh, that could go terrible places.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you kind of halfway through went, okay, well, we're both his partner, but now we're also each other's partner, and have the two of them kind of grow on each other that way. I think having something grow out of that conflict instead of having them just have that conflict, I think would be really interesting.
Yeah, I'll have to agree with you there. Let's see. Okay, so moving on to the Type Zero secret bonus. I don't know.
The extra
Telebi-kun DVD special thingy.
this wasn't the Telebi-kun DVD.
This
came. This was for the first certain amount of people that went to see the Movie Wars.
Oh wow! Even better.
Got Type Zero.
Okay.
The Telebi-kun DVD is apparently hilarious, and I haven't watched it yet, but
okay.
That's apparently really funny.
Okay, well then, never mind. yes. Sorry, I'm all thrown now. Anyway, so going into that, just real fast, so Shinosuke and Hayase are after a terrorist group, Neo Shade, and they've already had, five successful bombings somewhere in Tokyo, I'm assuming?
Yeah, probably. This is the first time it's really been addressed how serious of a... how serious the cases Shinosuke and Hayase took were. They were involved in terrorist cases and, like, really serious stuff. This is more than, you know, going after robberies or fraud, which are bad, but this was terrorism. And I kind of wish that had been addressed sooner, because that would add a lot of weight to how stressed Shinosuke is mentally.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I was, I gotta say, I was really taken aback by it, too. I thought it was something, I don't know, a little simpler, like you said, like, theft or, like, maybe drugs or something.
Yeah, just, like, busting regular bad guys.
Yeah, but that's kind of crazy. But I wonder how much of that, too, is, like... I don't know, do we in America have a more elevated sense of terrorists as like, oh, that's like a super criminal? I don't know. I was thinking about like Die Hard and obviously, you know, 9/11 and stuff. And
yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of weird. But terrorism definitely does make it seem like they're in a much higher league of law enforcement.
Yeah, I mean, of course, the regular terrorist connections to Kamen Rider bad guys. So, I mean, this shouldn't really come as that much of a surprise.
Yeah, you're probably right, but still, it was shocking to me, so... alright, so, let's see. Oh, yeah, Neo Shade is a callback to Kamen Rider G, and you probably
know
that, but...
Yeah, I thought so! Like, I knew I was remembering them from G, but I didn't feel like making the effort to go and confirm, because I'm like, maybe I just want more G specials, because that's all I want in life, is more Kamen Rider G. And now Drive has my hopes up for another G special that I'm not gonna get.
Yeah, nobody could blame you for that, though. Seriously.
Oh, Kamen Rider G was so good.
Yeah. I know. It was such a fantastic show.
I mean, I'm glad that now we have something that kind of ties G back into canon, other than Decade, because nothing is truly canon with Decade. Who knows?
I didn't even know. Decade
shows up at the end of G.
Oh, that's right.
To be like, you're a Kamen Rider, go do the thing.
Yeah.
But, like, this kind of puts G in our kind of post-Decade Heisei landscape instead of wherever he might have been before.
Yeah.
So, I mean, now my hopes up are for another G special.
Hey, that would be so awesome. Especially, I mean, it's been, I don't think it's another anniversary because it's a odd year. But,
well, it would be...
Every year is an anniversary, right?
Every year is an anniversary. Double O's Forze. Well, this would be technically if we were doing five, Gaim would have been the anniversary series. But
enough said. Anyway, yeah. Well, here's hoping for more G in our comic.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I can hope. I can dream.
Yeah. Okay, so it was funny that, like, I was, like, the terrorist thing, like, was a big deal to me, but I was even more shocked by, like, I felt like the crazy swinging tone from the woman allegedly being held, let me just read my line, because I'm not articulating as well. So I'm not sure if I like, the crazy swings in tone from a woman bound and threatened at knife point to read a ransom note to discovery that it's, here we go, by the copycat pirate, who seems silly. But then he is pretty creepy, so.
Yeah, like, I found him really threatening. I in general find masks to be really threatening. So, I mean, maybe that's just me. The whole pirate thing was kind of weird, but he definitely seemed like a very serious threat and knew what he was doing and was kind of going at this very intentionally, especially when we get the background that he just hangs around and copycats terrorist groups.
Yeah. Now, when you put it like that, it is, upon further thought, he is really creepy.
Like, this dude is, like, it's kind of funny that he's a criminal psychologist.
Yeah.
When that's probably exactly who should be looking at him and his behavior and kind of analyzing this. He was kind of a threat to me. So it didn't bother me quite as much.
Yeah, I guess I see that, but I don't know. I have a weird issue with it, but he is really creepy. I can't deny that. He does give me the creeps. But you know, from my own personal experience with psychologists, I have a theory that, it's very possible that a lot of them have been psychologically, or were psychologically damaged at some point and decided that they would try to, do something about it.
Just from, people I know that have gone into psychology. That's very often true. It helps a lot in understanding things if you've been there yourself.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true. I wasn't even thinking from the empathy. I was more coming from, like, somebody said something I didn't like, so therefore I wanted to make an ad hominem attack as a kid. So, never mind. Moving on. So Shinosuke and Hayase show off some good teamwork. I'm glad Hayase stopped him from beating the copycat pirate further.
Yeah.
Because that's important.
Again, like, I wish this was something that had been addressed sooner, because Tomari was apparently really stressed about these, like, terrorist cases to the point where, like, he can't really control himself. And he doesn't have this total control over his emotions and how he reacts to things, which is important since all of the drive forms are based on his emotional state. So, I mean, he should still sometimes be slipping like this or get too worked up. And I think having this addressed sooner and within the context of readily available canon, it would make it more apparent that he's overly stressed and has these issues that he needs to work through. And it's not just because of Hayase getting hurt.
Yeah, that would add a lot of meaning to his struggles thus far. But I wonder if they, instead of going with like what you're suggesting, where he like gets too worked up or is too stressed to do things, if that just turned into him like withdrawing and kind of being in a slump.
And I mean, I'm okay with that. It's just I think he should snap sometimes or come close to snapping.
Yeah,
and,
well, I mean, although,
like, Kiriko needs to pull him back.
Right. I mean, I complained once, you know, with the photographer about how he, like, you know, attacked him, and maybe that could be a sign of that, but only retroactively.
Yeah, like, again, this
is,
yeah, again, this is something that should have been addressed sooner, because that would have made that make so much more sense.
Yeah, that's also true. Good point.
It's, again, like, I agree that that scene was weird, and this does kind of legitimize it as being part of Tomari's personality that he needs to work through, but unless you've seen this, and this didn't come out until after that, even among Japanese viewers, this should have been put out sooner. This should have been shown somewhere.
I guess, though, overall, it might give me a little more faith that hopefully by the time Sanjo's lead writing on something for the third time, or I should say the fourth time, he'll, like, not have any super important exclusive information in extra material. And it'll all be, you know, like, properly ordered.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just taking him time to get the hang of it.
Maybe.
Who knows? I don't remember much of his body of work outside of Kamen Rider and Super Sentai. I would have to take a look at that. Kind of see. But again, even if he... working on tokusatsu is a completely different animal from working on an anime.
Right.
And...
did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Okay. You're supposed to say, end of line. Okay, let's see. Okay, so the next thing is the density shift taking effect, the density shift talking effect, which seems to be what I'm under at this moment, is still dumb visually.
Yeah, it is weird. Again, I just hate slowed down audio, so I just live with it, but it is kind of weird. I guess it's just easier to understand them rather than having them talk slower, in having the audio slowed down, even though that would make more sense.
Right.
But I really cannot think of a good reason why it's not. I just go with it because I hate slowed down audio. Like, I can't understand slowed down audio in English. So.
No, that's fair. Okay, let's see. Okay, so, we've already talked about this extensively, but yeah, it sounds, I mean, evidence from just how he sounds, Proto Drive really sounds like Chase's actor, so.
Yeah, I do think we've had it confirmed that is his actor.
Okay.
Doing Proto Drive's voice. Yeah, no, he's basically Proto Drive. We're pretty much there.
Right.
Unless somehow it comes up and he's not, but I'm not really against it. I just want to see how they play it. Because now that we've got him doing the Roy Mude Zero thing, it could be much more interesting than we all assumed it was.
Right. Okay. And then again, there's still no actual motive for world dominance or domination that has been exposited, and that's really bad.
Yeah, we really need clarification on this promise number thing, and what the Roimudes are going for. Do they want to just, you know, destroy all humans and then populate the Earth with Roimudes and just go on as if they were humans?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really see...
Again, that's very, very Guy Arc from Go On, Jar.
Well, it's weird, too, because, like, do you remember Chase saying, like, I don't know, like how, kind of like how weak and sinful humans are, and Roimudes are, like, a superior being?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, he said but that doesn't really make any sense. I mean, it makes sense in the context of these are a species that have deemed themselves superior and thus look down on humans. But that's not really a motive for, like, what their end game is.
Okay. Yeah, no, you're right. I was about to accept it, but no, that's a good point. That isn't a motive.
That's just, okay, we don't like you. And, I mean, that's, okay, you don't like humans, you want to get rid of them, but Chase has decided he can't kill them. And it still doesn't explain how they plan to actually get rid of them.
Yeah.
And maybe, I mean, I'm fine with the explanation being simple. Again, going back to Kuga, the whole thing, it was just the Monster Olympics. It was just, okay, well, you know, who can kill the most humans? That's the game we're playing. Go for it. I'm like, okay, that's acceptable. That's your end game.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really argue against that. Okay, well, do you have anything else you want to say about, this episode, or the special, or, like, what's coming next with Mach?
Mach's coming. They hugged in the episode preview. Kiriko and Go hugged, and I am really weak for siblings, so I don't know how I'm going to feel. This is going to be really hard for me, because I'm still against this as a concept.
Right.
But I'm really weak for siblings. I'm really weak for family stories in general. So this is going to be me being like, aw, they have this whole sibling dynamic. Yeah, family stuff. And then I'm going to be like, well, but this is still, like, a bad idea. Right. So I'm gonna be all over the place, like, with my thoughts on this. I know 12 and 13 are probably going to be, like, just a basic introduction to Mach arc. And then I know kind of the basic framework for 14 and 15 as an arc, which is getting back to kind of a more victim of the week thing.
Okay. We should probably talk about this off air, but so does that mean that episode 12 we should do as a standalone? It'll be standalone? Is that right?
No, we could probably do 12 and 13 together.
Okay.
And then 14 and 15... are, because again, 12 and 13 are probably one arc, and then 14 and 15 are probably another arc.
Okay. Okay, very good. Alright, well, everybody, thank you for listening.
Yeah.
If you're celebrating the holidays, please enjoy. I don't know, have a good time with your family, eat good food, relax if you can.
Yeah, definitely. Take it easy, hang in there. Hope to hear from y'all soon.
Yeah. And if you're not celebrating, well, then I'm glad we were able to put this episode out for you to enjoy while you're working or doing something else.
Yeah.
All right. Well, goodbye, everybody.
See you next time.
You can reach us on Twitter at UncommonRx or the show's inbox, UncommonCastRx@gmail.com, to submit any questions, suggest topics for future discussion, or just let us know how we're doing. This episode's hosts can be reached at Trial of Heroes for myself, and at Sono Your Face for Sono. Please rate and review to raise our visibility and listen to us wherever you are by subscribing through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite RSS reader. This has been a production of the Tool Network, bringing you analysis for the team. For more, visit trialofheroes.wordpress.com.